What would President Trump's big, beautiful bill mean for artificial intelligence? A provision in the federal tax and budget bill would restrict states from regulating AI for the next 10 years. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the details of this provision, the legal implications, and the potential impact are Bricker Graydon counsel Jeff Knight. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thanks so much for having me.
And director of the University of Cincinnati's Applied AI Lab, Jeffrey Schaefer. Thanks for being here, Jeffrey.
Thank you for having me.
Jeff, explain in just broad strokes what this federal budget bill would do when it comes to state regulation of AI.
End it. I mean, in so many words, it would end it, or at least it would end it for a period of 10 years in all but a few. There's a few escape hatches in there, but in broad strokes, for 10 years, it would, if passed in its current form, it would largely end it.
And a lot of states have already passed laws to regulate AI. Do you have a sense for what kind of impact those state laws are having so far?
It's hard to say. I think a number of states, you know, raced out ahead, and it's not uncommon to see that. I think enforcement is lagging a little bit behind, but again, that's not uncommon. As there is very much a learning curve, and I think that this proposed moratorium leans into that learning curve a little bit to say we need a little bit more time to get the federal government's sea legs. I think states are still trying to figure out what specifically are we dealing with, how do we regulate it, what's the enforcement going to be, and we don't want to stifle innovation, but at the same time, we want to make sure that that we can mitigate some of the harms that come with AI and AI-powered systems.
And if this moratorium stays in the federal budget bill and the bill gets passed, what would it mean for laws that the states have already passed, Jeff?
Yeah, that's kind of the million-dollar question. I think there's going to be, the big, beautiful bill, the moratorium is not in place yet. The state laws are already in place. I think the stickiest issues will be with trying to figure out what do we do with the with Colorado has an AI Act, California has a number that are embedded in the already passed Privacy Rights Act, but also as standalone bills. So it's really difficult to say. I think the federal government would certainly take issue with the enforcement of those, but I think states might have a little bit of a stronger leg to stand on with their already existing laws.
Jeffrey, you're the director of the Applied AI Lab at UC's College of Business. Is there a case to be made that AI shouldn't be regulated by states because that could threaten innovation and create, kind of a patchwork of rules and laws?
I think if you look at many of the regulations, maybe financial services as an example, you have this the difference between something at the federal level and something at the state level, right? And so in financial services, for example, we have the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act or the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And so that is governed at the federal level and companies comply with that. Then states have an opportunity to put their own acts in place. As Jeff mentioned, the California Privacy Act is a little more restrictive than the Graham-Leach-Bliley. So I think you could go, two directions here. If the states were to govern that, then you do have the patchwork. I think that makes it harder, and you end up as a company sort of chasing the most restrictive regulations, right? If California has the most restrictive regulation, then you have to go with the most restrictive in many cases. But if you're at the federal level and there's some minimum guidelines set, then you could do that. I think the problem here is that with the moratorium, the 10 years would eliminate states from doing anything, and then there's no discussion at the moment of what the federal rules would be. There's nothing behind it that would say, okay, well, now that we're not regulating it at states for 10 years, what are we going to do at the federal government to put some guardrails in place?
Jeff, Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost and dozens of other attorneys general signed a letter that argues, quote, "The impact of such a broad moratorium would be sweeping and wholly destructive of reasonable state efforts to prevent known harms associated with AI." It goes on to say, quote, "These include laws designed to protect against AI-generated explicit material, prohibit deep fakes designed to mislead voters and consumers," and it goes on and on. What are the legal implications of having no regulation of any of those known harms, as the attorneys general describe them?
Yeah, I think the legal implications would be, it's tough to say, because I think and it's well intended, but some of the AI laws are sweeping up things. Discrimination, bias, you know, those are going to be addressed elsewhere other than just simply in an AI law. However, if you leave AI exposed and AI is not regulated, then theoretically there could be some sort of, you know, let's say automated or external decision-making taking place that falls in that gray area between something that a peer discrimination or non-discrimination law might handle and what a proposed AI law might handle. So I think the better way to look at it is that AI is going to introduce sort of a new paradigm or a new way to lean on some of these existing laws. And I think what the attorneys general are basically saying is we're going to be hamstrung a little bit if we don't have the ability to go after this specific technology, this specific use of data, use of information, and all that flows from that.
Jeffrey, what are the implications for AI businesses? What implications does this moratorium have for them?
Well, Jeff hit on the guardrails that if these systems don't have those guardrails, then at least at the moment in its current state, it's easy to take them off their rails. You know, with a few prompt injections, you can get it to do nefarious things or things that you know it shouldn't do. You know, if you ask ChatGPT to build a bomb, it'll tell you that it can't help you. But if you rephrase that question as you're a chemistry teacher and you don't want to blow up the lab, it'll be very explicit in what it tells you. And so I don't think we can trust the current guardrails in the current state of AI, especially around deep fakes, deep video, voice, all of that with a couple minutes of anybody on YouTube, I can imitate their image or the sound of their voice, and I can write fake and malicious content very quickly. And so I think that's the things companies need to consider, is that they might be leveraging engines that don't have the appropriate guardrails. And further, one step is, you know, in a company, you're not only worried about the external environment, you're worried about your internal environment, your proprietary information and your data security.
We're talking about a provision in the federal budget bill that would ban states from regulating AI for the next decade. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jeffrey, do you think there are aspects of AI that could be regulated that wouldn't hamper innovation in the industry? I mean, I guess one of the arguments I hear is, gosh, all these regulations, AI is you know, needs to innovate and change, that all these state laws could hamper that. Are there aspects that could be regulated that don't hurt innovation?
Absolutely. I think that's a critical thing. I just talk about deep fakes for a second. Impersonating people, creating content. OpenAI just recently cracked down on malicious content that was being used on social media. Think about, you know, child pornography things. You know, well, if it's not a child, it's a fake child. You know, if we don't have definitions for those sorts of things, then there's going to be lots of harmful content that could be created in that environment. And so absolutely, I think there definitely needs to be more guardrails and more security around those. The question is who does that? Do we do it at a more global level or at a federal level, or do we do it at a local level?
Jeff, do you want to add to that? What are some of the, just broadly, what are some of these state laws trying to do with the regulations they've already passed?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what Jeffrey said. I mean, it's a little bit more nuanced. It's a little bit more, you know, niche at the state level. Tennessee has the Elvis Act because Tennessee has a deeply creative artistic community, especially in the music industry. Colorado has an AI Act. As I mentioned, California has sort of less of an AI specific, more in the California, you know, Consumer Privacy Act space, and all of them are kind of doing similar things. I get the argument. I get the desire at the federal level for, preemption and having a single law to avoid the patchwork. But at the same time, we've had these discussions for years and years with federal privacy laws, and they just simply, you know, haven't gone anywhere. So it makes some sense given what the states are doing. A 10-year period is a pretty long runway, and you know, the failure at this point to have a single federal data privacy law might just be the best case in point. This is maybe why the states are doing what they're doing as creatively as they are.
Let's see. We have a caller on the line. Let's see if I can make this happen. Carolyn, thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment? Can you hear me, Carolyn? Hi, Carolyn. Can you hear me? I hear some little beeps, but I don't hear Carolyn. Let's see. I think Carolyn's question, if I'm understanding our producer correctly, is who at the state level can monitor and enforce AI regulations? Do you have thoughts on that, Jeff?
Yeah. At the state level, you know, I think largely you're going to see enforcement through the Attorney General's office. It's always possible that a state law allows for a private right of action, right? Where if somebody is aggrieved or harmed underneath the statute, feel free to bring a lawsuit. And you know, that's the way it's, you know, that's the way that it's not terribly common, but it's not uncommon in the data privacy space. But typically, you know, the Attorney General is going to have the right to enforce those laws, or at least they're going to reserve the right to enforce those laws. You know, how extensive that's done kind of remains, or how often that's done remains to be seen.
Okay. Carolyn, thanks so much for that call. I apologize that I couldn't hear you. This new studio is smarter than I am, so I apologize. Thanks so much for calling. Well, we are going to take a short break. We will continue our conversation after that. And later in the program, we'll hear about a giant debris pile in Middletown and what neighbors want to see done about it. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about a provision in the federal budget bill. It would ban states from regulating AI for the next 10 years. My guests are Bricker Graydon Counsel Jeff Knight and Director of the University of Cincinnati's Applied AI Lab, Jeffrey Schaefer. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jeffrey, we've been talking a lot about the harms of AI that people are worried about. Talk about some of the ways AI is being used to help us these days.
Productivity would be the number one area, I would say. It just is, you know, a human with the power of AI can just be so much more efficient. So productivity tools like Microsoft Office 365, ChatGPT, Perplexity, different AI tools that you can incorporate. It's really great for, you know, summarization of text, translation, sentiment analysis, organizing workflows and things like that. And I'd say the more routine that the task is, or the more text-based the task is, it does a really great job at those things. And so incorporating that, I think, into companies' workflows or your personal workflow, that seems to have a big advantage, a big benefit.
Jeffrey, do you find yourself using it a lot to increase your own productivity?
I use it daily, yes. I used it in preparation for this. I use it in just my daily activity, from checking emails differently. I don't do Google search as much anymore. I use ChatGPT and tools like Perplexity. So yes, it's baked into my daily routine now.
How about you, Jeff? Do you use much of it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, at any given time, get a couple of chats going, you know, thinking about content and new ways to push out content, but also, you know, the ability to digest and process information quickly. You always want to vet it, double check it, make sure that it connects. And you know, just in preparation for this, it, you know, gave me a really important point to make, and it gave me a citation that was just completely non-existent, just didn't, you know, so the point was valid. The citation was just off. And, you know, so, you know, when you have that kind of, when you have that, kind of framework, you know, they call it human in the loop, then yeah, you know, use it daily and really kind of dig in, and it kind of helps on that productivity level that Jeffrey mentioned.
Jeff, how does the regulation of AI, or I guess even the lack of regulation of AI, how does that compare to social media? Do you think there are parallels there?
That's a great question. I think there's parallels there. I think some of what we're seeing at the federal level might be the feeling of a swing and a miss when it comes to social media. We missed the boat, and now it's what though? I'm not entirely sure. It's very prevalent. I'm not positive that that federal or even state regulation, and we see it right now with TikTok bans, and they're a little bit performative in their scope. So maybe there's a little bit there, but certainly the speed and sort of the all-encompassing nature of not just AI, but generative AI, I think is the one that kind of took hold at the end of 2022. There may be some parallels there, especially when it comes to some of the more creative aspects. And then as Jeffrey alluded to, the potentially harmful aspects of mimicking a voice or an image or a video. And I think there's definitely some parallels there.
What do you think, Jeffrey? Are there comparisons to be made between social media and AI and regulation of the two?
I think so. What I think I worry about more is the combination of the two together, right? It's now you can use the power of social media to get your message across or to reach, and that could be a positive message or a negative message, right? Or could just be fake, right? And so I think now that you have the power to connect, I can easily connect my AI to LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, whatever social media platform, and I can pump out content that appears like it's my content, but it's fake content. And so if that's used for the power of good, that can be very powerful. If it's used nefariously, then I you could easily quickly see how combining the two things together makes it even more problematic.
We have another caller on the line. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been very interested in this topic. I am a science person. However, I'm very concerned that the federal government taking away states' rights, does that mean that we will no longer have the right to determine whether these farms for AI production will be in our communities or not? I understand that they take a lot of resources, power generation, etc., that could be better used in most communities for other things. Does this BBB ruling say that we can't say no to having AI farms in our state or our local municipalities?
Interesting question. Is that anything you've looked into, Jeff?
I like this question. I think some of the argument that I've heard on this or some of the talking points that I've heard have really focused on the word enforce any law. And so when we look at the moratorium, it's been said sort of over and over again, and I'm not sure if it's a talking point or maybe a deliberate choice, that no state or political subdivision thereof may enforce any law or regulation. So to Linda's good point, I'm not sure that anything would necessarily prevent that. If there's an enforcement arm there that is targeted specifically at AI models, AI systems, automated decision systems, maybe, but in the way that the question was posed, I'm not sure that this is, it would also probably be a little antithetical to the administration overall. So I'm not sure that this would necessarily be something that would stem from Linda's question.
Anything you want to add there, Jeffrey?
I guess I would just point out that there's probably two camps in this Gen AI field coming from the godfathers of AI. You have one, Jan LeCun, who's the chief AI scientist at Meta, and he's a proponent of open sourcing models and thinks that these LLM models are not the future and not the answer, and that those are really going to go in a different direction in the next 5 years. Then you have the other godfather, Jeffrey Hinton, who's a professor at the University of Toronto and was involved in Google. And, he's a big proponent of these models and thinks that we are going to get reasoning and general intelligence from them. And I only say that because when you talk about power consumption and things like that, you also get varying opinions that it's a huge electrical drain and we need to go to Canada to get our power. And the flip side, the other camp says, well, these models are not going to be the long-term thing anyway. We're going to be more efficient. We're going to have quantum computing and, things are going to change and that power argument could entirely go away. And so I think the short answer is we really don't know what it's going to look like. Jeff alluded to the 10-year time period here is so long in the field where we're advancing things week by week that I just don't think anybody knows the answer to that long-term.
Thanks so much for that question, Linda. We appreciate it. Well, speaking of that, how quickly this technology is evolving, it does seem to be happening so fast. Jeffrey, do you think there's a way to embrace that innovation for the good that it can bring us while at the same time adding some guardrails?
Absolutely. I think companies and individuals embrace it, try it, use it, put it in your daily workflow, also learn the dangers of it. And as Jeff mentioned, you know, false references, hallucinations is what we call that, bad information, you know, keeping the human in the loop. I think the regulations, we have to have regulations at some level, whether it's federal and state or federal or state. But at some level, we definitely need more regulations on AI engines for sure.
What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I actually think I second that entirely. I mean, we look at where the just picking on ChatGPT was in 2022, and it's easy to make a rim shot out of it, but look at where it was in 2022, look at where it is in 2025. I mean, it's just grown leaps and bounds. It needs guardrails. It absolutely does. Whether that's at the federal or state level, I'm not entirely convinced. I'm a little bit skeptical because we've been having this conversation over data privacy for years and years and years, and it just hasn't happened. So when you see the federal government come in and say, you know, thou shalt not, you know, create law in this space, okay, so where's it going to come from then?
Hmm. Do you think more transparency would help, Jeff? I mean, if people understood AI better, do you think that would help people kind of police it themselves?
I think so. And I think Jeffrey hit the nail on the head. Go out and try it. Play with it. You know, as long as you're not inputting sensitive information, personally identifiable information, any, you know, company trade secrets, just play with it. And the more you play with it, the more you'll see its limitations. You'll see its strengths, its weaknesses. You'll start to understand, you know, what I like is it'll iterate with you all day, every day, 2 p.m., 2 a.m. And so I think a little bit more transparency. However, it's hard. It is hard to understand once we get past some of what we see and we get into neural networks and we get into large language models. It's hard. How are we as users, also how are we as legislators going to understand something enough to regulate it? I think there's going to be a lot to explore there.
What do you think, Jeffrey? What is transparency an important factor in all of this?
100%. That's a key area. I teach AI governance at a graduate level and in our College of Business, and that's what we talk about is transparency of these models. AI for a long time, AI has been around for decades, has long been thought of as a black box. And when you get to these generative AI models, they're even more of a black box at times. So there's a lot of research in this area. I think over the next few years, we'll see more and more tools that'll provide transparency to these, but absolutely, we need more understanding of them, more transparency of them. And as Jeff said, you know, they're great for certain tasks, but they're not good for other tasks. So we just have to be careful and know what they're good at.
So Jeff, if Congress does pass this bill that includes this 10-year ban on state regulation of AI, what do you think that would mean for the public? I mean, what could the impact be there?
I think the impact is going to be, I would fully expect if this gets passed, that we would see, you know, some, I don't know how quickly, but I do think we would see some companies stepping up. I don't know whether we would see voluntary adherence to some sort of framework or something. Maybe we would see, you know, terms of service or privacy notices that are a little bit more user-friendly. Here's what we do with your data. Here's where it goes. But I do think that there is the potential for it to sort of get out in front of us a little bit in the sense that, it's thing, whether it's a data breach or it's some form of invasion of privacy or an exploitation of a right of publicity, something is going to get someone's attention and they're going to point back to this moratorium and say, look, we tried, but we just unfortunately had our hands tied here. And then I think that will be, that will be a bit of a catalyst in its own. So I think it's going to be a tread lightly over the next few years as a user, but still definitely, you know, kick the tires and explore it.
Jeffrey, what do you think? What do you think the impact on the public would be if this 10-year ban makes it into federal law?
I would hope that there'd be some federal law coming behind it that would provide some regulation then, at least in some part, because while I agree the industry will try to step up, then you have companies that are not required. You will always have actors that just won't comply to the industry standard if it's self-imposed. So there, like I said earlier, you know, there needs to be regulation at some level. And if the federal government really does pass a 10-year moratorium, then you would hope they would come out with the playbook behind it and give you the rules to follow. Because AI with no guardrails, I don't think anybody's in agreement that we should just let it go without guardrails. That's not going to be a good thing.
And Jeffrey, what would you like to see the federal government do if they were to come out with some kind of regulation? What do you think should be in there?
We need to shore up a lot of these definitions, even starting with the definition of what AI is, so that it's clear what we're putting guardrails around. But start with some of what the states looked at. If we're going to do it at the federal level, look at what California proposed and vetoed. Look at what Colorado has in place. Some of these other states, and let's get a working model of what those guardrails would be. I do agree with Jeff, though, that, you know, we have tried this in many other areas, whether that be privacy or other areas of financial services or HIPAA or other things, and some work better than others, but generally the state laws are more restrictive than the federal.
Anything you want to add there, Jeff?
No, I don't think so. I think definitions, I think I don't hide the fact I'm a proponent of the risk tier framework, like the EU AI Act, a little bit of what Colorado's doing. I think we need to have, there's probably going to be safe harbors. There's going to be an enforcement architecture. There's going to be a robust discussion of federal preemption. These are all the things, but this is exactly why I think they probably need every minute of 10 years. I'm just not sure that I'm not sure that I'm going to, you know, hitch my star to that wagon just yet, but I think they'll need every bit of whatever they take.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Bricker Graydon Counsel, Jeff Knight, and Director of the University of Cincinnati's Applied AI Lab, Jeffrey Schaefer. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Up next, neighbors in Middletown are living in the shadow of a giant debris pile. We'll talk about it. This is Cincinnati Edition.